Welcome to Food and Loathing, your boots and your stomach on the ground in Las Vegas, Nevada. Dedicated to tasting as many dishes as possible, so you only have to taste the very best. The feet within those boots belong to me, Al Mancini, a 20-plus year Las Vegas food writer and the creator of the Neon Feast restaurant guide app and website, which, by the way, provide restaurant recommendations from Las Vegas F&B pros in over 100 categories. But we've also got a pair of feet in those boots from Samantha Gemini Stevens, a veteran food writer who now serves as the editor-in-chief of our sister news site, neonnews.vegas. Hello, Gemini. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm good. You could hear, if you're wondering, we'll guess that sound this week. There's no no background noise, no garbage trucks, but we are doing this via Zoom because we have a very, it's not even Zoom, it's some other Zoom knockoff, but we have a very special guest today, our man in Chicago, this podcast's longtime producer who still lends a hand from the Windy City. Maybe we should call him our producer emeritus, the one
like
and only.
That. Right?
There you go.
Lend a hand. If I didn't do what I do, it wouldn't be a podcast still, no matter where I am.
I know. Well, yeah, I don't honesty. Know, man. I finished my
job
part,
security, you guys, man.
You guys fight out amongst yourselves how to make me sound not too horrible. I try not to get involved in that because it would just be too crushing on my ego if I knew everything you had to do to make me sound okay. Uh-huh. So, yes, but Rich Johnson is here talking to us, telling us about how he's adjusting to life in the Chi, as
yeah.
He said. Rich, what's been going on before we get into where we've been eating and all that kind of fun stuff? Catch us up to date. What have you been, how have you been settling into your new home?
But settling is still a work in progress. I've been in two different temporary locations, and the day after we record this, I'm going to a third, hopefully the last, as I'm waiting for approval on an apartment that I'll tell you all about in a minute, but, because it is a food-centric location.
Yeah!
I'm having a good time learning.
Temporary. Yeah. You're not like in a homeless encampment or something.
No. I'm in a very furnished apartment that I only get for a few days at a time because I get a discount. So when somebody who wants to pay the full freight comes, they throw me out with 3 days' notice, and that's what they're doing here. So anyway,
that's definitely better than a homeless encampment. Yeah, so I'm feeling happy for you.
I'm learning my new digital skills for News Nation, the almost all news cable channel headquartered here. Spent my first 2 weeks at the corporate offices downtown with a commanding view of the green Chicago River on St. Patrick's Day weekend. And now I'm in the big News Nation newsroom up on Bradley Place near the venerable studios of
Fancy.
WGN, one of the oldest TV stations in America, the place where
Bozo
the Clown began his career way back when. So a little history there. Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah. And WGN Radio is part of the empire, too. That's pretty cool to see those guys still.
Yeah, they were a long-time ABC News affiliate of ours when we worked together over there, weren't they? I remember doing stuff on the air at WGN for some reason.
That was now.
You remember the three-letter stations, because there ain't a lot of them out there, you know? And,
you know what WGN stands for?
I'm not even going to guess.
I know. I'm making faces.
World's Greatest Newspaper. When McCormick, the guy who started the Chicago Tribune, started doing radio in the 20s, that was the name of the station, and it still is today.
And there is your nerdy broadcast and journalism news for the day. Let's get back to food before we lose all these people. Rich, man, you got to be telling me you had a Chicago dog dragged through the garden since you've been there.
Oh, hell yes. You know, first off, I found my bar, the venerable Gene and Giorgetti's Italian Steakhouse. Think of it as like Chicago's version of the Golden Steer. I think it was founded about the same year, 1941. It's in the same spot right under the L tracks, just north of the river, about two blocks away and one block over from Mr. Beef, which is where they shoot the bear. And they're actually shooting the third season now.
Yeah.
Gina Giorgetti's a dark bar, veteran bartenders and servers. The appetizers, non-steak items have been good to me so far. I'm still waiting to have a steak. But the pours of Macallan 12 are generous. There's no little measuring jiggers in this joint. It's, okay, that's enough.
There you go, man.
So Gina Giorgetti may be the most venerable steakhouse around here, but the most famous is Gibson's. at the confluence of State and Rush Streets. I have not been to Gibson's yet, but I was able to secure a seat at the bar one busy Saturday at its sister place next door, Hugo's Frog Bar. It's a seafood-centric place to go with the Gibson steak-centric place.
I love the name.
Each place will serve the other's menu if you want it. And I sat there at the bar, and I thought I was ordering a nice little crab avocado salad, a bunch of crab inside it, half an avocado. No, a generous pile of crab interspersed with avocado slices, capers, lettuce, all in a lemon vinaigrette that really hit the spot. Mm. It was good value for the dough there. You know, you mentioned hot dogs. This is a town of dogs and Italian beef and Polish sausage and other hearty fare served up by a lot of independent places. Yeah, there's plenty of chains, but the mom and pop places are just too good to ignore. They cook their meat mostly on flame grills. That is sort of the flavor of Chicago fast food. Yeah, those are some well-seasoned flat tops, but the smoky grilled cheeseburger is the big winner. I had made a semi-pilgrimage. I've been there before. The Billy Goat Tavern. You know what the Billy Goat Tavern is?
Not at all.
I've heard of it.
Did you ever watch the first iteration of Saturday Night Live with the original cast way back when?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
There was this Cheeseburger.
That inspired John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd when they were with Second City to create those recurring dinner sketches. I have been there in the past. And let me say, of all the burgers you can get in Chicago, this is
a burger you can get in Chicago.
yeah, it's not the best by any means, but I did have a perfect bacon and egg toast and hash brown breakfast there. So that's my go-to place in Lower Wacker.
If your claim to fame is being parodied for your accent 45 years ago, you know, maybe the food isn't the star of the show. That's all I'm saying.
Right. But it is a 24-hour joint. It's under, not Lower Wacker, Lower Michigan Avenue, which is a whole other street below the main street. And in the old days, the Chicago Tribune printing presses were across the street. The Sun-Times presses were a block and a half away. And so when all the pressmen would get off after the final edition rolled at about 4 or 5 a.m., they'd go do some hard drinking at the Billy Goat. Which 4 a.m. is the closing time here, but I'm not sure it was, more of a suggestion long. Than the law, I think, of the Billy Goat. big local chain here is Portillo's, which may be coming to Vegas.
A lot of
sports writers are hoping for. They play the Chicago hits and they do pizza and other bar food, huge joints like 200 seats, order at the counter and get your stuff. And I went there and had a chopped salad. But it was a really good, really big chop salad. There's a donut chain here called Stan's Donuts. They're very good, but not exactly in my Hall of Fame. They just happen to be on every other corner and people here.
How's the plain cake?
They didn't have it. They actually stopped making the plain cake.
But she doesn't bitch about them, man. Never.
They had the plain cake, only they covered one in cinnamon and one in powdered sugar, but they didn't have any.
That's
just
not plain anymore.
Because they were not moving them.
Get us one more headlight, Rich. We have tested the limits of people on places they're not going to eat. Ever.
I hope I have found some lodging. I'm renting an apartment just off Devon Avenue. Looks like Devon, but I know it's pronounced Devon, in what is known as Little India. Indian, ooh, Pakistani, cool. Burmese, Nepalese, Persian, and who knows what other restaurants all packed door-to-door for about a mile. Also fantastic grocery stores. I put up some pictures yesterday of a mile of aubergines, so it looked like there. I went to one buffet over there the other day. This place, I couldn't tell you what I had to save my life. I knew it was all good. This was a tikka masala free zone, shall we say. This was real Indian food for real Indians. And I will be exploring a lot more of that and report back another day.
Awesome. I'm super excited because that neighborhood would make me so happy.
Oh, yeah.
So what we usually try to do up here at front, everybody, you know the deal. We try to tell you about places we eat because they may be places you want to eat. So if you're headed to Chicago, play that part back and make
a special appeal to James Trees and any other chefs that have Chicago connections. You know, tell them I'm here. Get me
absolutely.
In. Offer me suggestions. Or in James's
case, this is where I'm surprised you haven't hit any place that actually has a Vegas outpost. Like Let Us Entertain You is based in Chicago. They have a million restaurants there.
Yep.
Happy Camper, where I just went, they're in Chicago. Bavette's, of course, is located also out of Chicago.
You can't get into the Bavette's here. It's just really tough ticket.
Dini is a great restaurant in Chicago that I like. There's so many fucking restaurants in Chicago that I like. And also
the guy who just opened the steakhouse at Fontainebleau, Funke.
Yeah.
He's got a new place that's opening. He's got a couple places here as well.
So go your next assignment. Yeah. Find places.
Go to real restaurants. I know.
Yeah. No, man. Well, first of all, like you're in steakhouses a lot. I've noticed that, but yeah. I'm happy to hear that you didn't have a big steak every time. You know,
I've not had one big steak.
Crab. You're having crab and things like that. So, because I worry about you, man. I worry about that blood sugar over you there, man. Your cholesterol and everything, man.
Well, let me check the thing right here as we're
getting checked out. Gemini, where the hell have you been eating? They're so tired of pushing the fast forward button.
I love it.
Gemini, where have you been eating here in Vegas?
Well, last week, as you know, Al, I got to go down to the Uncommons and check out Todo Bien. The Uncommons, of course, is across from the Durango Hotel Casino. That's where the Sundry is located. Amari, there's a whole bunch of beautiful places over there. And so they had their grand opening a few days later, but I got to go on a media night. So just fair warning, if you've seen any of the photos about it, the food is not served there. I'm going to just start with that. But it's a great space, fantastic cocktails. The aesthetic is warm and cozy, kind of hip. It really looks like somebody had fun with the decor. There's candles everywhere. There's a patio, which I love. And, you know, we can share more about it easier. As I tell you, I sat down with Curtis Knickerbocker, partner and general manager.
I was doing a speakeasy before, and I ran a tequila underground spot, and I've also ran a couple food restaurants, sports bars, and I did the nightlife, and one of my partners back then saw what we were doing. They thought we could do it on our own, and this is kind of where the creation came from. You know,
so you're a tequila guy.
I love tequila, mostly mezcal though. Yes.
I knew I liked you. So tell me a little bit about the tiki tequila bar concept.
So we're not your traditional tiki bar. You know, it's not Polynesian or anything like that, but we still brought in some good tiki glassware. Try to keep it more towards the Mexican style on everything. Cactuses, cactus bowls, the Mayan tiki mug that we have. It's just, she's the goddess of agave, you know. So we played off that, but we also hit everything on the menu for everybody's liking. It's not just what we like, it's what everybody else likes too, you know.
How do you want this to present to people? What kind of vibe do you want to get? What is the message here?
So the best way to describe this is things that I've seen recently, and it's mostly where usually you go out, there's TVs, everybody's on their phones, nobody's really hanging out talking. We don't have TVs here, and I don't know, you'll pay attention throughout the night, but you'll see it. Nobody's on their phones, nobody's just looking at it. People are interacting again, and it's just, that's the type of vibe we want. People to just come hang out, have a good time, and have good cocktails.
That's amazing. So why did you pick Uncommons and the Sundry, and, you know, we're right across the street from Durango Resort? What was your choice behind making this the location?
So the idea and the concept was brought to me with already the location kind of decided on. But the location was what sold me on continuing coming on the project. You know, I saw what was happening here. I knew it was going to be big. And it just sold me on, let's do it here.
How long did it take you from concept to tonight?
All in all, it was a little over a year and a half being on the project with the design, designing the bar, building up the program, figuring out the cocktails we're going to do, close to 2 years.
And can you tell me a little bit about your bar? We have had, I think, a mango drink of some sort.
Yes, that would be the Solar Flare. That's a tequila mezcal blend. And what we do is we infuse it with stone fruits. So mangoes, apricots, figs, peaches, and we'll vacuum seal it, put it in a sous-vide, and it gets infused that way. Yeah.
So I love the aesthetic. It's very dark, low lights. I love the indoor-outdoor sort of aspect. When everything shuts down, when these doors close or it's dark at night, how does the lighting work? Does it go up? Does it...
stays down. The lighting will stay down, stay dark. All the candles get lit inside. It builds a better atmosphere. Usually the doors are open all night, but like last week with the weather, we closed them. We are still getting slammed. It's a desired destination to go to.
That's amazing. So you're soft opened so far?
Soft opened. Tomorrow.
When is your grand opening?
Tomorrow, March, what is it, Thursday, March 21st?
Yep.
Yeah, that'll be our grand opening starting at 6 p.m.
Okay, great. And will it be 7 days a week?
We're currently 6 days a week, closed on Mondays, Tuesday through Friday, 3 p.m. till midnight, and then Saturday, Sunday, 12 p.m. till late.
What about Vegas in general made you think that this is what the people were going to vibe on?
You know, everybody comes out to Vegas looking at the Strip. You go down to the Strip to see the big concepts, the nice lounges. You don't really have that locally, and that's what we wanted to bring off the Strip and give it to the locals.
And again, that's down at the Young Commons. They are open every day but Monday. And it's based, they love their tequilas, they love their mezcals, as Curtis said. So get in there, try it out, take a group of friends. It's super fun. On Friday night, we, again, probably the second time in as many weeks, hit Hard Hat Lounge for a smash burger from Stay Tuned. Going downtown, we were meeting some friends. So we went to visit the sort of official bartender of this particular group of friends. We call the Mudslide Boys. We met up at Hugo's Cellar inside the Four Queens for cocktails. After a few of them had already eaten dinner, the dinner plans didn't jibe with our schedule. So we just met them afterwards. And we were served by Hugo's own 20-year bartender. They just celebrated him, Dean Erickson. Dino makes amazing cocktails and in very large formats. You probably only need one or two. And he's always got a smile on his face. He knows who you are the minute you walk in the door. Like, he really wants to take care of you. So high five to the guys over there at Hugo's on running that teeny tiny bar they have. And if you want to visit Dino specifically, go any night except Sunday or Monday. And then on Sunday, we celebrated John's birthday a day early. His birthday was yesterday. And the same group of us went to the steakhouse at Circus Circus. We had a great center table overlooking the over-the-fire cooking area in the center of the restaurant. I just love the vibe there. I love the decor. There's people coming in and out, either super casual or dressed to the nines. But the service was impeccable. It's your classic Vegas steakhouse. The beef was next to none, great onion soup, huge side salads, and a fantastic wine selection. It was a great dinner followed by five of the seven desserts on the menu, because there was five of us. Yeah, so we each chose something different. And
desserts are they doing over there?
Okay, so we had a strawberry cheesecake, New York cheesecake. We had a tiramisu, which was a little bit different for me. Instead of having these huge layers of the ladyfingers, there was more of like the mousse type stuff, and it was really light and delicate and lovely. The flavors were perfect. There was a double or triple chocolate cake involved. There was chocolate covered strawberries. We decided not to do the bananas Foster. And there was one more in there, and I can't think of it off the top of my head. But
do they do those table side? Do you recall? Do they do the bananas Foster table side?
I don't know. Yeah, we didn't order it. So, when we went, John and I went on our own, not too distant past, and we didn't get dessert. So I hadn't seen anybody get it table side. Yeah, I'm curious myself. So
I'm excited that you were in there because, the place, the Circus Circus has been through some ownership changes. We're talking past several years, not right away. But there are a lot of people, Circus Circus Steakhouse for me, there's always been this dichotomy of Circus Circus versus Golden Steer. Where do you want, when you want that real Rat Pack Vegas vibe, right? Which one of those joints do you go to? And I've always been a Circus Circus guy, more so than a Golden Steer guy. But I've had a lot of friends recently saying that they thought that kind of Circus Circus isn't quite where it used to be. But, in my opinion, it's always been a great restaurant. The beef is fantastic. They dry age the beef in fucking house. You can look in that aging room.
Yeah, you see it when you walk in the door. Yeah. They've got a beautiful aging room.
Yeah. They grill it on mesquite wood. You see the fire. You can smell it happening. The prices have always been super reasonable. So I'm actually toying with the idea of visiting both this place and Golden Steer again to see if I still think Circus Circus is my favorite. But since you've been back... Okay. But what do you think? Like, are you still, you're still loving Circus Circus? Are they still keeping it up?
You know, I really enjoyed it. Yeah. The last two times I've been there, like I said, everything was on point. I literally had nothing to even nitpick. Even coming down to cleaning the crumbs off the table. The plates were hearty. John and I split a steak and they still gave us like the sides and the veggies and all of the stuff.
Wow. Cause yeah, that's part of the pricing. That's amazing. There is your sides come with included in the price. You get either a salad or a soup included in the price. As a result, it's a lot less expensive than dining at a typical Vegas steakhouse.
Yeah. And if you love steakhouse bread, they've got a good selection. The basket comes out. There was a huge amount of it on the table. You know, the water service was great. We had cocktails at the bar before we started on wine with dinner. My experience with both of these places in the past year have been the opposite, where I have been really disappointed by Golden Steer and have been really surprised, pleasantly surprised by the steakhouse at Circus Circus. So yeah, I think a comparison is on the books.
Yeah, we should do a side by side. We'll write about it over at Neon News. We'll have some fun with that shit. Okay, my turn. I'll try to be quick for everybody. I've just been out and about a lot this week. Chef Josh Capon was in town last week. You may remember him from Spike TV's Frankenfood or some of the many other TV shows he's been on. Or you may know him from Capon or Capon Burger, which just opened its first Las Vegas location in the Fountain Blues Food Hall. They had a nice little party over there that Josh was there, very casual. Couldn't find a publicist or anybody to save my life, but I'm sure I just wasn't looking at the right places. Everybody just interacting, having a good time, talking to the chef. Chefs out there bringing out food. What do we need to know about it? First of all, let's pronounce the name. It's Capon or Capone, right? But not Capone's. Three different people told me, like, first somebody said to me, Al, are you going to Capone's? And I was like, no. And it turns out, oh, they were going to Capon's. And then when I got into the hotel, I asked an employee, hey, where's Capon's? And they're like, you mean Capone's? But I spoke to Josh and he did not pronounce it Capone, and it's his fucking name. So going with him. So it's Capon, like a little baby chicken bird. Like,
yeah. Capon,
right. Next up, but the food was really good. I dug the smoke show burger, which had a lot. It was a barbecue style burger. The straight up burger was really good that I had. Pizza was actually even really good. Both above average for a food court. Good enough that I would order it again if I was there. Not necessarily dishes that I would travel across town to get, right? But if I'm there, yeah, they're good. And here's a bit of my conversation with Chef Josh.
Listen, I am honestly honored to be part of the Fountain Blue. It's probably the nicest hotel to open up in 50 years plus in Vegas. The hotel is breathtaking, but the culinary program is second to none. The lineup of chefs and restaurants in this hotel is extraordinary. I am thrilled. I mean, some people say it's a big deal to get your name on the floor in Vegas. I got my name in lights in Vegas over there with Capon's Burgers. We're serving, I think, some of the best burgers on the Strip, and just a great thing to be a part of.
So for those who may not have had your burgers before, tell them what they can expect.
I think you're going to expect one of the most satisfying burgers you ever have in your entire life. Starts off with the Freitas beef. We do an 80-20 blend, chuck short rib brisket. All of our potato rolls are made in-house daily. And I got to tell you, as important as the beef is, so is the bun. Lettuce, tomato, pickles, secret sauce, American cheese on the classic, caramelized onion, bacon jam, crispy onions, and American on the smoke show, and the blackjack, black truffle aioli, shredded crispy potatoes, and a little raclette cheese over the top. The milkshakes, the gelato program, the soft serve, it just doesn't get better than this, everybody. Welcome to Capon's at the Fountain Blue in Vegas.
I also paid a visit to Dejo Cabijim on Decatur near Sahara. And this place has been mentioned on a couple of Neon Feast surveys. So I've been toying with, you know, I think we are going to be adding it very soon to the app. And then when DoorDash asked me to write up a list of reviews for their blog, you know, there was a lot of back and forth between me and the DoorDash people. Like, do these restaurants take DoorDash? Can I write about them, et cetera? And So I noticed this on their list of places that did take it, right? And so I knew it was going to soon be added to Neon Feast. So I decided to go over there and see if it was any fucking good. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. What have I said? It's basically, here's some stuff that I actually wrote up for some things. So you may read this somewhere. It's the first Las Vegas restaurant from a family that entered the restaurant business in 1957 in Seoul in Korea, of course. They've been operating in the San Francisco Bay Area, this family, since 1990.
Wow.
There's signature item here is the cabijim, which is a traditional short rib dish served in a soupish kind of dish, I believe, served in portions large enough to two or three people. So wow. I did not order that because I am only one person and I was ordering several already. And I didn't want one of my entrees to be for three people. But if you're a smaller party, you, by the way, it's a really beautiful restaurant. The place looks very nice. I was there for lunch. It was kind of empty when I got in there. If you're a single person, you're going to look to other options like I did. There's a kalbi tang rib soup, which you would get instead of that kalbi jim. You can also get bibimbap, which I got, the hot stone rice dish. They also offer Mayang Mun, which is a cold noodle dish, or Yuk Kui, which is a beef tartare. So there is stuff that you can get in single serving, and I had several of them. I did the a vegetable bibimbap, which was fantastic, and I did a really good kalbi tang. So I would definitely return to this place. So check them
out. Cool.
Back to Fountain Blue and me lecturing people, or no, this time I'm being lectured on pronunciations, okay? because we've decided that Capone, C-A-P-O-N, is Capon or Capone.
Yep.
Not Capone's. Now, how would you guys pronounce KYU? Rich, you there?
I would try not to.
Yeah.
sounds like a trip to HR to me, man, if I don't watch out.
I assumed that would be Caillou. Like, that's to me.
I get it. Yeah.
Caillou. And I go, Caillou. But I'm wrong. It's Q. Rich got it. Yeah. It's Q. So I was corrected. Always a good way to start an interview when you don't know how to pronounce the name of the place. Actually, I did ask first. So I was there to interview the corporate executive chef, Christopher Aralanes, excuse me. And it was a fantastic interview. So good that it ran 15 or 20 minutes. So I'm saving that for next week. But after the interview, I did stick around for some food because if they're going to feed me, I stay, right?
Yeah.
And this is a gorgeous restaurant, by the way. It's right on, it's overlooking Las Vegas Boulevard. You can see that big up the car that's sticking out of the ground in front of the Fountain Blue, you know, that automobile that's, you know, with its up and down, whatever. Anyway, you can see all that shit from there. Dishes that he made for me, and I just had to tap out eventually. But spicy tuna on crispy rice was really good. The rice was so fucking good that I think they used too much of it. I would actually use a little less of the rice because it's good and it can tend to be the star of the show, and I want the tuna to be the star of the show. I had some bone marrow Wagyu tartare made table side. I actually made a short. Oh, this was so great. So
that's right.
Right after we did last week's recording session with my friends Emmy and her daughter Alex, and I babbled on and on about how my videos always are too fucking long, right? So I made a super short fucking TikTok video of them making our table side, and I put some heavy metal music behind it. So that was cool. So you can find that on the TikTok channel. But man, it was great. They smoke out they torch the bone marrow at your table. They bring the torch, then they scrape it out, and they already have the beef tartare there with all the seasonings. They mix it in and it's fucking great. It comes out with these like Parker House rolls, but they're seasoned almost with a bit of like tagine or something kind of spicy on the top of them. Really, really fucking good. And then, man, the piece de resistance, pork belly pastrami bao. Again, a flashback to me talking to Alex last week, our guest, and I asked her if she's still, you know, because in my mind, pork belly jumped the shark about 7 or 8 years ago when she was, you know, nine. And she was saying it's definitely come back. You said it came back. I agree it's come back after having this dish. Imagine just the most luscious pork belly, but seasoned with traditional pastrami seasoning on the end.
Wow.
And then it comes out with the bao buns and some pickles to put on there and some Japanese miso mustard to put on the buns, and really, really fucking good. So you'll hear, I think, next week my full interview with the chef, but I just wanted to get you fucking hungry right now. So
yeah, it worked.
Awesome possum, man. Next up, Naked City Pizza. I missed their brunch kickoff. They started a Sunday brunch at Naked City on Paradise. And I was all excited to get there, but I woke up and, you know, first things first, do the work. Then get the food, then get stoned. That's the weekend, right? Like work, drive to get the food, then get stoned. And I got all my work out of the way and the brunch was fucking done, right? So I went over there anyway because I was craving it. And I got their Rebel pizza, which was great. Brought it home to Sue and to Sub. The Rebels, the pepperoni, ham, salami, tomato, and fresh basil. Tomato? What?
You're hanging around me too much.
Right? But great pizza. If you guys don't know Naked City Pizza, I mean, great story. Chef Chris Palmieri, he was the youngest executive chef at MGM Grand's history when he ran Rick Bayless's Mexican restaurant for them out there, decided he was sick of the strip. And we're talking about long before the strip exodus that led to our current, you know, great restaurants like Sparrow and Wolf and things like that. This was 4, 5, 6 years before that. Chris was like, fuck it. He started his own sandwich shop down in the Naked City neighborhood, down by Dino's. And then he eventually opened Naked City Pizza. It was first one was in Moondoggies. It blew up. Guy Fieri went in, Triple D. Now he has locations all over the two locations right now here in Vegas. He's got a location back in his hometown of Buffalo. It is Buffalo, New York style pizza, even though like John Arena looks at me like I'm crazy because that's not a style sometimes, but it's what Chris grew up eating in Buffalo. Yep. And it's fucking good. It's a cross between a, I'd say it's a spinoff of a grandma style pie would be the closest, but he crushes it. He always puts a lot of fucking toppings on it.
Yeah, this was there's no really, such really thing good. As too much stuff on a Naked City pizza.
No, but this one was not sloppy. It really held together well, and I was able to eat it in bites without like having to change my shirt twice during the meal, which sometimes happens with his pizzas.
I just go knife and fork, and I am not ashamed.
Well, I love Naked City, and it's a good time to send them a shout out. So thank you, guys. Sorry I missed your brunch. I will try again. I'll wake up earlier and work sooner.
Yeah, I've got to get in there ASAP because when he had the tavern down at Sunset and Pecos, oh my God, I was there like 3 or 4 times a week. I loved breakfast over there. I'm super sad it was short-lived, but yeah, if he's back doing brunch, I'm in.
I believe 1 o'clock was the cutoff for that brunch. I believe. Okay. May have been 2, but if you get there by 1, you will definitely get brunch. If you're thinking about 2, look, double check. Don't trust me. Okay. Because I missed it. So I'm not your fucking guy.
Fair enough.
Lunch at Cureton Way. And I had what may be my favorite sandwich in all of Las Vegas, their duck Reuben.
Oh, that looked so good.
Yeah, if you've never had a duck Reuben at Cureton Way, go. They have lots of other good sandwiches, but that's about it. And, I mean, that's about all I eat for me. It's like I do the duck Reuben 90% of the time, and I do the Cuban 10% of the time. Oh, and they have lots of other great fucking shit there. They're amazing, but that's all I eat. So, yeah, I'm a creature of habit when it comes to that place. So that's about it for me, trying to make you hungry. Coming up in the news, a culinary nightmare is now over, which is sad news for those who love horror. But first, we sit down with Alan Carter of Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits and UNLV senior Peyton Azilio to discuss this year's UNLV Vino. This is Food and Loathing.
Here you are in Vegas. You're hungry and the choices are endless. But do you really want to trust the crowd? You can trust Neon Feast. Restaurant recommendations from real food pros sharing where they send friends and family. All that knowledge is just a download away on the Neon Feast app. Want the strip, off strip, downtown, great views, great value? Find smart, informed restaurant recommendations on the Neon Feast app and neonfeast.com.
And joining us for this segment, as promised, we have some representatives of the upcoming UNL Vino Sake Fever event.
Oh, my God.
We've got Alan Carter from Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits. Hello, Alan. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
Good to see you, man. I don't know if we've ever had a conversation, but I see you everywhere.
Oh, no, we cross paths a lot.
Yes. So you're here representing Southern Glazer's Wine and Spirits, who, of course, have been one of the sponsors. We're the creators, really, of this event, and we'll talk about how many years ago that was, because I know it's a little complicated history. So I want to bring people up to date on that. But before I do, also joining us is Peyton Azilio. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's perfect.
And you're a senior at UNLV, correct?
I am, yes. I'm a senior in the UNLVino class at the Hara College of Hospitality here at UNLV.
And that's what people need to realize, is that UNLVino is a class that becomes an event, and it's got a little bit of history, and it's got all kinds of stuff. So it's a huge event for the school. It's a huge event for the community. And And I know that some people may not go every year, and they know that it's changed a lot since they were students at UNLV. So I want to go back in the history, and I don't know who would be better suited. I know, Peyton, you were not even born when this stuff happened. So we're not going to ask you. But, Alan, if I remember correctly, the very first UNLV was just kind of a drink fest in the warehouse of Southern, whatever it was called at those points, Southern Wine and Spirits, right?
Yeah, it was, I think, back in those days, it was even pre-Southern. It was 1974, and I believe we were at the point called Comstock.
Oh, okay.
So, and again, I'm getting all my facts from research. I was 6 years old at the time. But it was Larry Rubo, who is our managing director, started the company and is still our managing director, and Jerry Vallon, who was the dean at the time of the hospitality school at UNLV, and they got together and said we should do a fundraiser and put together this little warehouse wine tasting, and I think it was 30 people or 40 people at that very first one.
Yeah.
And here we are 50 years later and still doing it.
Yeah, and that's it always gets weird when people talk about how many years it's been going on, because it took some years off. I mean, even before the COVID thing, there were years that didn't happen. But so it was 40 plus years ago, and you were coming up on like the 50th anniversary eventually, you know, something like that, right? But this is like the 40th one you're doing? Is that how it works?
So actually, the way we're thinking of it is when we say 50th, not in years, but in actual events that we've held. So this will be the 49th UNLV event, the Sake Fever event.
Wow. Okay.
And we've got a little something up our sleeve we're planning for next year, a big giant 50 blowout, but we're still working on that.
Okay, so Sake Fever, so people know, is April 19th, 7 to 10 p.m. at Resorts World, at the Resorts World pool.
Correct.
And now let's talk about what it means that you're doing Sake Fever, because in those days, I know it started off, it was a kind of a drunkathon in your thing, sure. And for a long time, a lot of, if you know older people in this town that went to UNLV, they'll be like, oh yeah, we used to go to UNLV, you know, and it was just get drunk on wine all day. But it eventually transformed itself into a big hospitality educational event. And some years there are 3-4 UNLV events, some years there's only one, sometimes, you know, it's at different places. So could you explain what this year's event is?
Sure, of course. So when I've been with Southern for 11 years, so there's been a UNLV every year I've been there. And when I came in, it had started to really blow up. And so it was a three-day event. The first day was always called Bubblicious, and it was a champagne-focused event, sparkling wine event. And that would be on the Thursday. Then the Friday, there would be a big event, Sake Fever, focusing on our Asian portfolio. And then Saturday was the blowout grand tasting. And that's the model that I've been following my whole career. Obviously, with pandemic, we stopped doing it. And my marketing director, Shana Graham, and I were talking about ways we could sort of slowly bring things back without, you know, having to hit it with the big giant event.
Yeah.
And she said to me one day, she said, you know, my favorite event was always Sake Fever. It was unusual. It was different. It was a neat mix of product. And people really loved it. And I said, let's just bring back that one component so that we can do something this year and do something interesting. So that's why we selected Sake Fever rather than doing a grand tasting or a Bubblicious event.
Okay, so this is the Sake Fever event only, but there's still food, there's still beverage, there's still everything we've come to know. And most important to me, and this is your cue, Peyton, is there's still the students of UNLV. Because for me, food festivals in this town got to be a dime a dozen in a while. Hanging out at a pool and eating a lot of delicious bites. I mean, I hate to say we're spoiled, but we are spoiled in Las Vegas. And UNLV has always been really important because of what it brings to the students of UNLV, who are the future hospitality workers of the world. So Peyton, could you explain from a student's point of view what this represents?
For me personally, it represents a legacy. Years and years of work that hospitality students have completed and worked towards. I personally am actually on a UNLV scholarship, because at the end of the day, that's what all of our proceeds go towards, are the students and scholarships and different avenues to make our education happen. So I personally am on a scholarship. There's about four of us in the class who actually have a UNLV scholarship, and there's more in the entire program who have the scholarship. So I'm just so fortunate that I'm able to not only receive the scholarship, but now be a part of the class that is going to continue the legacy of UNLV and for years to come offer the same scholarships that I received to other students. So it's just, I love the aspect of the legacy that UNLVino has created.
And from a student's perspective, how's that scholarship work? You know, it's been forever since I've had to apply to a school, so forgive me on this, right? But, you know, in my day, it was like you apply, you hope you get in, and then you apply for whatever money that you can find, and then you figure out whether you can afford to go to the place that you want to go. So what are these UNLVino scholarships? Do you apply for them once you've already been accepted to the school? Do you apply for them when you're applying to go?
Yes. Yeah, so every year we reapply for the College of Hospitality scholarships. Every year they send out the announcement. It's time to, you know, reapply for our scholarships and everything like that. And there's a few different opportunities that we have, like specifically from the college. And UNLVino is a big one, though. And we just apply every year, and it's merit-based. It's based on, you know, your GPA, the extracurricular activities you do for the college, and just different components like that. So I've been able to receive it 2 years in a row now. So it's really been a huge impact on my education and being able to afford college. So
I don't want to get into people's personal finances, but what size amounts are these scholarships generally? So
the two I have received, the first year I received it, it was about $2,500 split into the two different semesters. Mm-hmm. And then this year I received a $1,000 UNLVino scholarship.
Okay, cool. So this is just something that helps you take out fewer loans, helps pay for ease the burden Definitely. Of going forward. And, but I love that you said, you know, that it sticks with you, that you've received this scholarship. So it's important for you to participate in this event, which is where we get the funding for these scholarships in the future. How many students, I know it must differ every year, like when you have a grand tasting and three other events or whatever, I'm sure there's more student participation on those years, but on a year like this, how many students participate in making this event happen?
So there's about, our class is a little smaller this year. There's about 15 of us, 17 of us in the class this year. We actually had to apply to take this class. It's a very prestigious class for the seniors. So we had to submit a resume and actually apply to take the class. We were selected. We were interviewed. It was quite a process, actually. So there's about 17 of us who are graduating this May that are working towards finishing the class. And we're split into two classes. We have a marketing team and like a logistics team. And we're just going around doing the whole event planning process. We're working with the marketing firm, we're working with Southern Glaciers, with their event people. So it's really exciting. It's a really exciting opportunity for us.
And what's this mean for you when you think about your job prospects, right? You're in your senior year. What are we in the second semester of the year, right? So you're going out of the workforce pretty, I don't remember what time people went to school. You're going out of the workforce pretty soon is what I'm saying. And from that perspective, what's this experience mean? What's it mean on your resume? What's it mean in getting called in for job interviews? Does it make you more confident on those interviews? What's the vibe among you and your fellow students?
It's a very significant event in the hospitality industry. And when we speak to hospitality professionals in the industry who have already established their careers, we've spoken to people at Resorts World who are helping us plan the event over at Resorts World. And they're like, wow, when we were seniors, we helped plan UNLVino. So we know what it's like. Like, that's amazing. And it's kind of crazy how we go out into the world and we talk about, oh yeah, like I'm a part of the class doing UNLVino. And they're like, oh my gosh, I did that when I was in the hospitality college. Or, oh, I remember attending that event. Like, that's so cool. Like, so it's really well known. And it's amazing to kind of have that comparison and similarities to people in the professional industry that we can say, hey, we're doing this. I know you did that. So it's a good, it really creates a bonding moment for hospitality professionals.
I feel like UNLVino is one of these events that really proves what a small town Las Vegas is.
Oh, so much.
100%.
And yeah. Like, no matter how big we get and no matter how much bigger and better they build these casinos and then, you know, Resorts World wasn't even here how many years ago, and it's one of the many hot new things that are out there, and yet we're doing a UNLVino event there, and it proves that close-knit community of Las Vegas. I will tell you, you know, I still get chills on my spine when I see a chef working in a high-end restaurant and he says, I served you at a UNLVino once 10, 12, 14
oh,
years
amazing.
Ago, you know, and it is very much at the heart and soul of our community, I think. But for some people, it's just about what are we going to eat?
I was just
going to
say,
right?
Speaking of food, talking about chefs, what are we eating? What's happening?
So because we've scaled this down a little bit, it's going to be between 10 and 15 restaurants. Of course, restaurants from Resorts World will be represented. Genting Palace, Kusunori will be there. But we're also going to focus on some of the smaller independent restaurants throughout the city as well. Gayu will be there. Kiara. One of the things we're really excited about, we're going to do a 300-pound tuna. On site.
Yeah. Oh, you have my attention.
On site. the great folks at Naked Fish are going to do that for us.
Oh, they're fantastic.
And Beam Suntory is actually going to sponsor that. So you'll literally be able to watch them carve a 300-pound tuna and then take a piece of that tuna right on a plate right there.
While drinking some really good Japanese whiskey, apparently, right?
you'll have your choice. A lot of great whiskey, but also our portfolio of beers and, of course, our sake portfolio as well.
People who have never seen that tuna carving, I mean, it's a thing. You know,
it really is.
I've seen seven or eight of them now at this point in my life because, again, we see everything. But,
yeah,
you know, these fish are massive. And we forget how big these fish are. And then to have this brilliant team just break it down right in front of you. Nothing goes to waste.
No.
You know, some of us are looking, we're eyeing, we think we know where that Otoro is. We think we want to know when they get into that piece, you know. And some of us also are just, oh no, let me have whatever you give me, man. People eating this raw tuna with their hands, having it handed to them.
Oh,
it's just such a cool event. Yeah, so who's going to, that's Naked Fish is doing that.
Naked Fish is going to do that for us, yes.
Cool. What are the ticket prices?
So the tickets are $75 in advance, which we wanted to make it accessible and affordable. As the event grew and grew, I mean, tickets in the past had been $100 to $125. We really wanted to open it up this year and get the community embrace this and help the school. So $75 in advance, $100 at the door.
Is part of the change in the ticket price the change in the format?
No, I just think that, you know, as we're all sort of relearning how to do things like this
right.
post-pandemic, we just, you know, we want to make it more accessible. As things are becoming more expensive, as to your point earlier, as there are so many more options, this is so important to us, to the community, to the school. We just want to make it accessible to everybody. And I do want to point out that 100% of the ticket dollars go to the school. There is no portion, it's 100%. We subsidize Southern Glazers and our supplier partners the entire event itself.
That's amazing.
So we don't even collect the money. The tickets are bought through unlvino.com, which is the school's ticketing system.
Yep.
You buy a ticket, they keep the money.
I think that price drop, actually, I mean, you know, now I'll say some stuff that'll probably piss off somebody out there that's listening. But I think that's important, right? Because, you know, for years and years, I've been in this town 23 years now. I have been going to events like this for all of those 23 years. And I've been comped at quite a few of them. I'll be the first to admit that. But I remember the days when it was like, I'm going to throw down $100 or $75 and it's going to be all I can eat and all I can drink and I'm going to get wasted and I'm going to be full and I'm going to have all this gourmet food. But then they just kept going up and up and up.
Yeah.
And I remember the grand tastings from Bon Appetit were getting to be 150 for basics, you know, 200 if you want the VIP, and then
yeah.
going higher and higher. And at a certain point, it's a law of diminishing returns. You're only, you know, there's only so much you can eat and drink poolside.
Right.
Right? In one night. Doesn't matter how many more things they add. There's only so much. So I think making these manageable, making them a reasonable thing that you could maybe ask a college student to spend to go up for a night out.
That. Like, I think it feels like it opens it up to more of the people in, say, Peyton's community that are younger, they're learning, they want to see how things are done, they want to meet people. So they're not spending their book money on.
Yeah. If you're a college student today, let's say, you know, freshmen, you know, they're coming in this year old enough to drink. Let's assume they're old enough to drink. Or they're planning to drink.
We all
let's
assume
just
that.
Assume that, right? So from the point of view of a student, is that $75 price range, is that like something that's doable?
I think it definitely is doable, especially because the hospitality college, we are such a close-knit community, and even the other colleges on campus, like, we are a very close-knit community. And I think especially after last semester and the tragedies that we experienced on campus, I think we've only gotten closer as a community. So I think fun events like this, we really view it as, okay, let's all get together, let's show that camaraderie, like, let's support the hospitality college, support our community, get to know people, because at the end of the day, there also are so many alumni that attend the event. So for us, we can also view it as kind of a networking opportunity as well,
yeah.
for us that are graduating soon or just trying to get our foot in the door in the industry. So it really is an amazing opportunity and an attainable price for sure.
Yeah. And I think I know so many people who they talk about this event the same way they talk about going to see like a Tarkanian basketball game or something, right? Like, I mean, it's for a lot of people, it's like the old Rebel guy, the Yosemite Sam looking guy, and this event and some basketball games and now some football games, of course, in Allegiant. But that really is, you know, I think it's cool to know because, you know, when I was in undergrad million years ago, you know, we had our college radio station. That was like the thing that I did, right? But I feel like this is a not everybody did that, just, you know, certain people. This seems like an across the board. If you're a UNLV alum, man, yeah. You want to go back. This is like a homecoming football game kind of thing, yep. I guess, if you're a sports guy, which I never was, right? And that's what it feels like to me. Is that still kind of the vibe?
I think that's definitely the vibe. Alumni that we speak to are so excited that it's coming back, and they're so excited for the grand tasting and what we have in store for years to come. So I think it really is a big focal point of the community and the alumni.
I want to talk about something that always gets me in trouble. Well, it actually used to get me in trouble when I drank at these things. Now that I don't drink at these things, I do not go home with as many auction items that I did not want. But that used to be my deal.
I was just
going to
ask about the auction.
Yeah. So what are you guys auctioning off? Because we like to spend money.
Well, we're still working on it at the moment, but it's a really exciting aspect of the event. So we're luckily, because the Hospitality College has so many connections in the city, we're working with MGM and Caesars Entertainment and Cirque and different businesses like that in the city. So I think it's going to be a really exciting opportunity. The silent auctions, we hope it's going to be really big this year. Because at the end of the day, that also goes towards.
You can't tease me with something cool, though. Nothing on there. Like, you didn't see one great thing that you can tease.
I don't want
to spoil
anything.
Oh, man.
They're not even telling us. We don't even know.
I can't spoil it. It's too exciting.
Okay. There's going to be a lot of booze, I'm betting, at silent auction. Some rare bottles. You have anything like that?
We are going to put together some things because it's so specific to our Asian portfolio. We're trying to find some cool, fun, you know, rare things that we have around.
Fun.
Or that our suppliers can provide out of their own cellars.
Yeah.
So that you can get some one-of-a-kind things.
I'd like a Hibiki age statement bottle. You got any of those back there, man? Because I'll throw down some dough.
I'll take a look. I'll see what I've got.
Any questions, Jeff?
You hit the last one I was going to ask, so I think I'm good. I mean, I think maybe one question I would have, is there a way for people to donate if they can't go to the event or take part in the auction if they can't go to the event? Is any of that going to be online?
The auction itself is not going to be online, but you can view the products in advance online. We will be setting up that closer to the event, but you can view the products online. If people aren't able to attend, but they still want to participate, we are welcoming donations for silent auction items and things like that. So if a local business or something like that wants to actually just donate either a gift certificate to something or actual items, or even we've had in the past years, alumni have donated like designer purses and handbags and different things like that to the silent auction. Mm-hmm. So we are welcoming donations for the silent auction.
What about donations directly to the scholarship fund?
There, you can do that as well. I believe that if you go on the UNLVNO website, there's more information on that, or just even contacting just the Hara College of Hospitality School. We're always welcoming donations for sure.
Great.
Of course.
Beyond the food and the drink and getting to watch the tuna get broken down, which is really badass,
that's awesome.
I have to say. beyond that, what's the entertainment going to be like for the evening?
So we're still working that out, but we will have a musical element. We will have a DJ. In the past, we've used some Japanese dancers who did a big ceremony, and we've done a sake cask tapping. Mm-hmm. So we're working on all that. We're going to bring some of that stuff back, too. So it'll be a lot of fun. And the setting at the resorts were a pool, if you've never seen it. They've got the infinity mm-hmm. pool and the main pool. It's so beautiful. It'll be like walking around a village filled with booze and food.
Sounds cool. Well, no,
yeah.
It sounds fantastic. Hit everybody with the website one more time, please.
It is unlvino.com.
And that is unlvino.com, right?
There you go.
Well, look, thank you guys so much for your time. I really appreciate it, man. I look forward to attending this event. I've never had a bad time in a UNLVino event that I can remember. And I never ended up in too much trouble afterwards. So should be a great event. Thank you both so much for your time.
Well, really thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
We appreciate it.
The news is next. This is Food and Loathing. Would you like a free dinner for two at Joël Robuchon, the only Las Vegas restaurant ever awarded three Michelin stars? That's the grand prize in Neon Feast's photo upload sweepstakes. To enter, just go to the Neon Feast app or website and find the link to the photo upload sweepstakes page right up at the top with that picture of the Robuchon dining room. Check out the approximately 90 restaurants and bars that are listed on that page. These are the only restaurants and bars participating in the contest because they're the only ones that have activated the photo galleries on their Neon Feast listings. So find one you like, pay them a visit, snap a photo of some food, a beverage, or just you standing outside in front of their sign, and use the app or website to upload it to their gallery. Limit one entry per email address per day, one for a particular restaurant or bar per month. Find complete rules and details on no purchase mail-in entries at neonfeast.com/contest. It is time for the news, and Nightmare Cafe has closed. Sue actually noticed a post on their social media sites, which went up, I think it was Friday. And might have been Thursday or Friday. It said, quote, due to some unforeseen setbacks, we have come to the hard decision of closing Nightmare Cafe. This weekend will be the end of the adventure. And then it goes on to invite everybody in to say farewell. So as we were leaving, I forgot to tell you up there. I went to Esther's Kitchen for brunch. I'm saving that review or that report until I go back this weekend for dinner in the new location. So we're saving that. But that's why I didn't talk about it. But as I was leaving Esther's, people were lined up outside Nightmare Cafe as I was driving by. And I was like, fuck this, let's go in, right? Because I remembered that this was their closing weekend. And I've only tried Nightmare Cafe one time in the past. You may remember this story. I was on my way to the Punk Rock Museum. I had one of my friend's kids was with me, a teenager. We had some time to kill. We tried to get into Nightmare Cafe. Half the place was like empty. The tables were empty for at least a good half of it. I asked the guy if I could just grab a table, and his answer was something along the lines of, well, you could seat yourself, but it'll be 90 minutes before anybody gets to you. To which case I said, okay, thanks. Congratulations that you guys are doing so well, but fuck that. And we went to the Punk Rock Museum, and I think we ended up getting good pie that day. It was great. So, but that's my last experience with these people. Now we hear they're going out of business for some unforeseen things. I see a line outside again. I stop by, I park, I go by. That line ain't moving. By the time I get back, it's just this slow moving line of people trying to get in. I try to look in the window. It did not look packed again, but yet I just said, okay, fuck, I'm going to miss this place. So I didn't get there. Now, I don't want to make any assumptions about why they're closing, right? I don't have any idea. But my personal experiences there made it seem as if they had a great concept that a lot of people were excited about. The people who were online to see it on the last day were all clearly horror fans. And, you know, so there's a niche audience for what they do. So just given my own anecdotal experiences, I do wonder whether they were just prepared to run a restaurant or not. But you know what? Maybe not. Maybe everything was going fucking perfectly. They were making millions of dollars. Everybody was happy. And something, you know, just sad happened. I don't want to make any assumptions, but my experiences there were not that great. And I will not get the chance to check them out in the future. So that bums me out.
Yeah.
Speaking of closings, Jonathan Wright. Oh, by the way, it seems like Nightmare Comics, which they're attached to, is still open. And it seems to be operating just fine. So just the cafe, which again leads me to wonder, maybe it's not as easy to run a restaurant as people think. But who knows? Speaking of closings, Jonathan Wright of the RJ is reporting that Trevi has closed in the Forum shops.
Yeah, I saw a post about that.
He seems to have gotten that from social media on that one. So there's not a lot of details on what seems to have been a last minute move. But man, Trevi was something of an anchor tenant just based on the way it incorporated those replicas of the Trevi fountains, like right there, that are part of the whole being in the Forum shops deal. So who knows? We'll know we'll see what's up next with that. The Beast, which is Todd English's barbecue and bar food spot inside Area 15, has launched a new menu packed with what they're calling large feasts and colossal treats. The former are massive meals designed for groups of six or more, and they require 72 hours notice to prepare. The latter are large format shareable dishes. And to promote both, they have launched the Feast at the Beast Food Challenge, because nothing more attractive than somebody trying to shove their face full of food to avoid a check. Yes, that's sexy, baby. So this dares you to consume a burger with 2 pounds of beef as the patty, 1 pound each of bacon and cheese.
Oh my God.
Bacon and American cheese. There, you're going to have lettuce. You're going to have tomatoes. You're going to have onions. You're going to have pickles. You're going to have Thousand Island sauce. It's served on a round King's Hawaiian loaf. Not a fucking bun, but a loaf, motherfuckers. And accompanied by a pound of fries. Plus 4 signature potato tornadoes.
Oh, my God.
Finish it all and it's free. Tap out. It'll cost you $80. I'm tapping out, man. From the news on that one. Jim, you got any more news?
I got a few things. Some feel-good stories here connected to food. Lowry's Prime Rib is serving more than just prime rib in April. They're serving the community. During the month of April, Lowry's The Prime Rib Las Vegas will match a portion of the money raised by guests to benefit Opportunity Village and its mission to enhance the lives of Southern Nevadans with intellectual and related disabilities through vocational training, community employment, day services, advocacy, arts, and social recreation. It's a month-long initiative. It comes with perks for Lowry's loyalty members. You could also join the loyalty program. For each $10 donation, up to $50, VIP rewards guests will receive a $25 bonus reward on your loyalty account to use the next time you go in. Non-loyalty members will receive $25 towards, should they rather donate a minimum of $10 and choose to sign up for the program. For more information and the closest location to you, I think the one for us is just on Flamingo. It's Lowry's, Lawrys, online.com. And then the other thing that passed across
I want to ask you about Lowry's. So what do you think about Lowry's?
I've been to a couple of different ones. I've been in Chicago. I've been here in Vegas. And it's not a go-to for me just because it's so much food. But I've enjoyed it every time I've gone. I've had good company. So it's not, I mean, I don't know that I would put it on, you know, my top 10 list, but it's good.
So here's the deal. I know you have been helping me write some, both of you guys, as a matter of fact, helping me write up some of the new entries for Neon Feast, because we're constantly updating Neon Feast.
Yeah.
And we're constantly have surveys out in the field, and we're asking experts what they like. Lowry's has been popping up a lot, and it's been popping up on surveys a lot more since I added the category of best comfort food. And I like having that category because it's hard to define what means comfort food.
It does.
I think that's a good call, and I think we may be seeing that on the Neon Feast.
Part of the comfort is the servers in the 1930s waitress outfits.
Oh gosh, with the little thing here.
I call them the meat nurse because they're bringing all that stuff. Make me better.
Oh my! God. That just conjured up way too many things.
Well, that's on you.
Yeah, I'm just gonna keep my mouth shut.
I've been to your parties. So I know what the story is.
Sorry, you had one more, Gemini. What else?
I'm super excited to announce that Blue Ribbon Sushi Bar and Grill is opening up today as this episode drops, Friday, March 29th, inside Green Valley Ranch Resort and Casino in Henderson. The restaurant is already taking reservations via Open Table and will be open to the public at 3:30 p.m. on Friday. I love the Blue Ribbon over here close to us at Red Rock. I know that they've been involved in a couple of other things, not just here in Vegas. And so I'm super excited to see them go down into Henderson so people can taste.
Do you not know the Blue Ribbon guys' backstory?
Not that much, no.
I've known them for years here in Las Vegas, but they were back in New York, going into neighborhoods where the dirty and grimy punk rockers like my friends hung out and bringing fine dining to that back in the old days of the 90s. They've got such a great backstory. So you're definitely going to have to chat with them when they do.
I would love that.
Around this opening.
I would love that. I love the restaurant. So that just makes it even more exciting.
Are we done?
I think that's it.
More? Okay.
You got to go away now. Oh,
we've got to thank our friends from UNO.
I miss you, Rich.
Rich, where are you going, man? Where are you headed from this?
I've got back to work. I'm being taken out to dinner for my first real fine sit down dinner at some place that describes it as elevated Southern. But I saw fried chicken, pan fried chicken, so I said, "Okay, that's it. I'll report back another day on." And probably have 18 more Indian restaurant reports from Devon Avenue.
Yeah.
Well, we look forward to that. Hey, thanks to everybody who came on the show this week. Thanks to Josh Capen. Thanks to Curtis. What was Curtis?
Knickerbocker.
Knickerbocker. Thank you very much. Thanks to our friends from UNLV. Thanks to everybody. I'm Al Mancini. On behalf of Gemini and Rich, stay hungry.